Simpletons, and welcome to episode 2 of the Simpleton Podcast, the podcast where we like to break down the facts and figures on the earth that we live and provide them to you in a very simple, straightforward manner. Joining me this week, as always, is Scott Gall. Scott, how's things?
Enough of the small talk, Daniel. Let's get this thing done.
Well, quite right. I mean, I don't want to go into too much small talk, but my world was shaken this week with a magnitude 5.3 earthquake, which made me think about, you know, the important things in life. And this is why one of the reasons we've established this podcast, Scott, is to make sure that we live life while we can. And it's actually quite exciting, actually, because I won't go into the details now, but we have got quite a wide listenership. I'll break those figures out later on, Scott, but quite right. Let's get straight into it with the World Roundup. Scott, what have you got for us?
Daniel, we're going to start off with Europe, but I'm going to put forward the hypothesis that with the world's eyes fixed on Europe and the financial crisis, the world could well be barking up the wrong tree.
Scott, that's a pretty provocative statement. Have you got anything else to say about that?
First, a bit of context, Daniel. Now, I actually saw a protest movement. Now, Europe, Daniel, a cauldron of discontent, protests every day across Europe. I'd like to start off with one I saw firsthand a couple of years ago in Dresden, where I was.
Well, this sounds like it's going to be pretty big. I mean, Europe's quite renowned for some of the largest gatherings of all time, the largest gatherings of humanity of all time. To really promote causes and to speak out against quite oppressive regimes. So, Scott, what was this particular protest about?
I was on a tram, Daniel, in the evening, and I noticed to one side of the tram a protest march going by. Protests are often accompanied by police escorts, Daniel.
Police and escorts.
And in this case, there were three of... Police escorts, Daniel, the two words together, perhaps
so
even hyphenated.
So the police double as escorts.
And in this case, there were three or four police cars, also some police officers on foot.
You're just going to ignore what I said, Scott.
Which was interesting because with about 15 to 20 police officers and what I would estimate is about 20 protesters, there was almost parity, Daniel, between the protesters and the police.
Okay,
but that's not what was most interesting.
Protest.
No, but Daniel, it doesn't have to be big in number, Daniel, to be big on idealistic value. And listen to this. They were going past, they were repeating the same chant over and over again in German, which translated directly was no God, no state, no rental agreements. Over and over again, Daniel, and... as quick as it showed up, as quick as it caught my eye, it was gone. But it left an impression on me.
Break that down, Scott. No God. Okay. Some people believe in God. You know, some people don't. But I think we'll all agree in the history of humanity, God's a pretty big figure, no matter what religion is. The state, well, I'm referring to state control, government burden. Two very big issues. Two very big issues. And then it comes down a few notches, doesn't it, Scott? It comes down to rental agreements. Just briefly, Scott, do you have any fucking idea what this mob's on about?
No, I don't, Daniel. Nothing more to say. No idea, but it left an impression on me. I'll put it that way.
An impression on you, Scott. I think it's just left an impression on me. And I think it's going to leave an impression on the simpletons out there listening to us. So thanks for bringing it to us attention, Scott. And if you've got a rental agreement at but no God or state, drop us a line and let us know. We're happy to take correspondence on subjects of importance. So just contact at thesimpleton.com.au. Okay, Scott.
Yeah, let's move it on, Daniel. Now, since that time, I've thrown a bit of a passing glance at the protest movements across Europe. You know, lots of protests going on, especially in countries such as Greece, Spain, and a number of other countries where the people are hitting the streets en masse to demand, among other things, the right to retire when they turn 26. But Daniel, 26, this hang on, wait moves a sec, us Scott. On.
People are marching in the streets to protest about having to work beyond the age of 26.
Yes.
Okay, takes all sorts. Go on.
Daniel, this moves us on to the Pitcairn Islands, my original hypothesis that the world could well be focused on the wrong thing. With all eyes on Europe and the financial crisis here, my little tip, Daniel, is keep the Pitcairn Islands at least in the corner of your eye. What I mean by this
is... bubbling along there, Scott, that the world should be aware of.
Something's... You've put it well there, Daniel. Look at September 11, 2001. No one saw what was coming, Daniel. No, it wasn't supposed to be like that. No, tragic the world's day. Eyes beforehand. Pardon?
Very tragic day.
Very tragic day. But the world's eyes beforehand, Daniel, were fixed almost squarely on the release of the Leprechaun series in a DVD box set scheduled for that day. And Daniel... as we now know, it still went ahead on that day, but was consigned to virtual insignificance. I'm just pointing that out as an example, okay, Daniel, Scott, of how the world can be focused.
Yeah. Scott, at this point, I think I might just steer back to the Pitcairn Islands and what's happening down there, if that's all right with you.
Okay, let's do it then, Daniel. Sue, the Pitcairn Islands, where are the Pitcairn Islands?
My knowledge of geography tells me that they're actually situated in the Pacific Ocean, Scott. The South Pacific Ocean, as a matter of fact.
Quite right. Could you give a bit of historical context about the people there, where they stem from?
Very much so. The descendants of the population of the Pitcairn Islands have descended from Mel Gibson, who made the 1987 film The Bounty, in which he... overthrew Captain Anthony Hopkins and stole the ship, grabbed a few Sheilas from... What island was that? It was Tahiti, wasn't it?
Okay.
Sailed down south, stopped there and burnt the ship. And I think if you look at it now, I think it probably goes some way to explaining a fair bit of Mel Gibson's recent behaviour. Have I got that right, Scott?
Generally, I won't pick you up on every little small historical discrepancy, but you've generally hit the nail on the head there, Daniel. The Pitcairn Islands, Daniel, has come along across hard times, due mainly to rerouted shipping lanes and a drop in stamp sales. The Pitcairn Islands economy has been hit hard, Daniel, very hard, all the more pressing given that the island has recently bucked Western trends with its surging birth rate,
which is a worldwide issue, isn't it, Scott? Birth rates, population control. I'll be keen to hear more about this. Go on.
Yeah. So that's the birth rate increasing as it has put the very system behind the welfare state on the islands under serious strain. Daniel, so much strain, the islanders have attempted to get an appointment with American billionaire Warren Buffett, or Buffet, I can't pronounce his surname. Okay. They wish to meet with him at a conference in California planned for later this year to tap into his business expertise to see basically how they can get themselves out of this economic pickle.
Yeah, so look, I think the rerouting or routing of shipping routes is going to cause problem for any sort of tiny island, I suppose. And I understand that they've got a fairly large social security safety net there that I think was born out of their, I think it was something that Mel Gibson actually established, if I'm not correct, shortly after his arrival in 1987. But you also mentioned, Scott, something about population control.
You mentioned that. I mentioned a surging birth rate on the island.
Let's talk about the surging birth rate. What sort of numbers are we talking here, Scott?
Daniel, just let me ask you this first. Iran, Daniel, is a country of about 60 million people, at least last time I was there. That was about how many people it had. Let's just assume Iran with 60 million people went 17 years with not a single baby born, but then the next year 1 million babies were born in Iran. Would you or would you not say that was a surge in the birth rate?
Most definitely, but I'd also have to wonder why after several years there wasn't one single child born in Iran. So there's a little bit of a flaw there in your reasoning. I mean, I think it would be more realistic to say, well, imagine, Daniel, if the population of Iran only grew by, say, 20,000 each year over that period of time. But all of a sudden, one year, there was like 1 million babies born. How amazing would that be? That would be fucking amazing, Daniel, don't you think? And I say, yeah, it would be, Scott.
I hear what you're saying. Let's get it back to the Pitcairn Islands. So with a population of 60, Daniel, on the islands, they went 17 years without a single birth. Mm-hmm. But recently, that 17-year stretch was snapped with the birth of a child.
Scott, that's the surge in population.
Just think about the Iranian model I just put to you.
The Iranian model, yes, the Iranian model you put to me was deeply flawed. Deeply flawed. I think if they're worried about population surge, one little kid among 60 people, it's hardly gonna break the bank, surely. I mean, are they going to have to set up new schools, new kindergartens, new bus routes to deal with this one child?
I mean, Daniel, I only deal with facts. I provided you a factual model based on Iran and applied it to the Pitcairn Islands. I just repeat what I just said before. I hear what you're saying, Daniel. I guess it's up to the listeners to make up their own minds.
Okay. Well, moving right along. Scott, I would like to talk to you briefly about the future of journalism. Now, I don't know whether you have read the news this week, Scott. It's becoming increasingly difficult, if you know what I'm driving at. But this week in Australia, there's been massive reform in the media sector with the Fairfax stable of newspapers, cutting the workforce by 1,900 people, reformatting their major daily broadsheets to tabloid form, with an eye in the future to moving the entire business online and putting their existing website up behind a paywall. News Corporation, or News Limited as it's known here in Australia, the Murdoch-run empire, is moving in the same direction. What we're basically seeing, Scott, is not only the demise of newspapers, but in many ways the demise of quality journalism here in Australia. And I think it's a worldwide trend. I'm sure you would agree. However, the reason I raise it, and let's have a bit of a chat about this, Scott. And let's have a chat about it on air. I'm not sure. I don't mind. But I think this presents a real opportunity for the simpleton. I think with the basic closure of, or the absolute reformation of newspapers and the newspaper industry as we know it, I think that leaves a gaping hole for an organisation like the Simpleton to come along and fill that gaping hole. And I think that we've got the expertise and the know-how to be able to do that. And while my heart goes out to the families of the employees that are going to be laid off over the next few years, I say don't despair. The Simpleton is here to help with the passion and the energy that Scott and I bring to this. I think we can reform the media industry in Australia and probably Germany, depending on how long you stay there, Scott, and really get something unique and interesting happening. What say you, Scott?
I think you were being serious, Daniel, about that.
I'm
jesting.
No jesting whatsoever. Are we about to do some jousting,
Daniel? No word, please, or word associations, please. Let me just put this into perspective. We're talking about two massive news organizations, are we not?
The two biggest in Australia.
We're talking about. News organizations with readership or viewership of probably millions.
It's in the millions.
Think of all the advertising dollars associated with that. I think we're talking about news organizations which actually employ between them many thousands of people who don't have other jobs like you and I do. That is their job. That is their job, the news.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
And you're suggesting that you were talking about figures before. What are the figures that we've got? You're talking about bringing up the figures of subscribership and so on. Could you bring those up?
Oh, look, I think if I was to do it now, it's got to be slightly out of context.
Okay. So you're suggesting that us, we've got day jobs, we struggle sometimes to find, to agree on a common time where we can both do this for half an hour to an hour. And you're suggesting that us, with no real wealth behind us, you know, we're going to fill that hole. We're going to fill the hole that would other, or the vacuum that would otherwise be filled by those two massive news organizations.
Have you ever visited the Simpleton website?
Yes, I have. What's that got to do with anything?
Well, I'm just asking you to look at the quality of journalism on that particular website, and if it can be done there, surely it can be done everywhere.
I admire your boyish optimism, Daniel.
Okay, you want facts and figures? You want facts and figures? Okay, look, you're praying it out of me. We're going off the running sheet. That's okay. I'm a professional, but I'm also flexible. So don't ever call me inflexible, Scott. After last week's inaugural Simpleton podcast, I'm very happy to report, Scott, that in terms of new subscribers to the podcast, we now have 15 subscribers to the podcast, and I think if that was to increase 100% each week, I think by the end of the year we'd probably have many hundreds of subscribers to this podcast. I'm not talking listeners, Scott. Who knows how many listeners we have? But people have actually clicked on the button in iTunes and said, "Right, I want to have my finger on the pulse of the world, so I'm going to subscribe to the Simpleton." So you know, you're a little bit. I'll grant you, you're a little bit skeptical about our ability to transform the media industry in our respective countries. But let me just say this, Scott.
Yeah, say it.
I'm very, very optimistic. Okay? You don't get that sort of growth. I mean, the News Limiteds, the Fairfaxes of the world would love to have a 1,500% increase in circulation over 1 week in their circulation of their newspapers and other media interests. So all I'm saying, Scott, is just watch this space. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anything more than that. But what usually happens on this podcast when we can't really reach a coherent conclusion, we just say, watch this space.
Hear, hear, Daniel. Look, I like to see a young kid with some optimism and some, you know, some dreams. I say reach for the stars, Daniel. But just a little bit of cautious optimism wouldn't go astray here. That's all I'm saying to that.
Okay, Scott, happy to keep a lid on it. Shall we move on to our next segment, Scott?
Yeah, what is it?
World sport.
Daniel, let's bounce straight into it. Yesterday, Germany played Greece in the, I think it was quarterfinals of the European title. Defeated them 4-2. A fair bit of venom associated with the game, not on the field, but off the field. It was widely billed as a game between banker and debtor. A lot of Greeks have simmering resentments towards Germany, both for historical and modern reasons.
We touched on this a little bit last week. Didn't we,
Scott? Yeah, we did. We did. And Daniel, the game yesterday was a little reminiscent in terms of political tensions attached to it, to when the Ethiopian soccer team last year replaced Eritrea in Group C at the CAFA Senior Challenge Cup due to Eritrea's lack of funds, which of course was symbolic in the context of the vicious large-scale border war fought between the two countries at the end of last century. Daniel, that aside, I want to touch on a feel-good sporting story this week.
Sure. Look, I have to say that I sometimes struggle with the comparisons you come up with in some of your stories, but I'm just going to hold on to that for a while and let you get on with the next sporting event you want to cover. Go on.
Yeah, yeah. A feel-good sporting story, Daniel. A sport now looking at taking radical steps to keep itself free from the yoke of political or any other kind of tension. Daniel, it's time to talk kokpa.
Scott, we talked. Well, you're the one actually mentioned before, not actually playing with words or indulging in wordplay. So you mentioned cockpa. Very, very interesting. I'm all ears, Scott. I'm all ears.
Well, Daniel, that's the name of the sport. Millennia old sport born on the steppes of South Central Asia.
What does cockpa mean? What does that translate to, Scott?
Look, I don't know, Daniel. It's the name of a sport. What does football translate to? I don't know. It's the name of a sport.
Okay, well, let me just again put it out there to the listeners. If you want to send us some correspondence on what the translation of cockpa is, by all means, drop us a line at contact@thesimpleton.com.au. Proceed, Scott.
Daniel, is this what we're now doing? We come across a word that shares a syllable with a crude word for the male sex organ, and you start sniggering at it. Is that what we're doing now?
Look, I don't want to particularly insult anyone's culture or lineage or their sporting history, but come on, Scott, cockpa, you know, sounds like a hole in one. If you don't mind me saying.
Daniel, if it's your intention to drag me down into the gutter.
I mean, imagine if, you know, it was a golfing term. Wouldn't that make golf far more interesting than it already is, you know?
Tiger Woods standing on the ninth hole. He needs this for a cock par. Without a cock par, he can't take the green jacket for 2012. The cry of silence. It's in the hole.
Daniel.
What? I know it's doubly funny because we're talking about Tiger Woods, but it would make it interesting. And look, I'm keen to hear about the sport of cockpa, Scott. Go ahead. Educate us.
Daniel, as I was saying, if it's your intention to drag us down into the gutter, which I'm starting to think is a place you're not really...
I'm not dragging us down into the gutter, Scott. I'm just interested to hear about this ancient art of cockpa.
If you want to drag us both down, Daniel, I won't go quietly. I'll be kicking and screaming every step of the way. Daniel, should I proceed on
cockpa?
Should I proceed?
By all means.
Daniel, cockpa, as maybe you know, maybe you don't know, is popular in Central and South Asia. One of the national sports of Kazakhstan, similar to polo with a few small differences. One being that a beheaded goat serves in lieu of a ball. Another being that camels often represent the spoils of victory. But Daniel.
I think I know what you mean now.
Yeah.
You go on.
Prompted by animal rights activists displeased by the macabre role played by goats in the game, it appears that the Agency for Sports and Physical Training in Kazakhstan is set to introduce fake dummies into the game, which would possibly not only save some goats or a large number of goats from this macabre fate, but would also prevent disruptions to the game, Daniel, which often happen during the course of the game as it goes on when the goat carcass starts to disintegrate.
Well, Scott, I'm gonna come out and say it. If the authorities introduce dummies into cockpa, then that's just not cricket.
Okay. So you're maybe arguing that cockpa traditionalists.
I'm a cockpa purist, Scott.
And you're saying it's I think you're being sincere about this. I'll take you at face value. I can't see your
my experience with cockpa was seeing Johnny Rambo in Rambo 3. Who was fighting in Afghanistan against the Soviets to help the fledgling Mujahideen, which eventually turned into a splinter group that we now know as Taliban, get up and defeat the Soviet empire. I vividly remember a scene of him playing cockpa, and although he'd never come across the sport before, had never seen it, had no idea what the sport was about. He got on the back of that horse and he showed those Afghanistans how to fucking play cockpa like never before. Am I correct, Scott?
Daniel, I think you're generally correct. I think that might have been an Afghan spin-off of the sport, or perhaps Kokpar is a spin-off of the Afghan version, but you're generally barking up the right tree, with the exception of referring to them of Afghanistan's. Daniel, Afghanistan is the country, Afghanis or Afghans is the nationality. But the rest was pretty good.
Well, I refer to them as Kokparists, which is what you call a person that plays Kokpar, Scott.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take your word for it. So I think that's enough about Kokpar, Daniel. What do you think?
I don't think anyone can really ever hear too much about Kokpar. But in the interest of the show, I think it's time that we probably
move on. Daniel, you present yourself as the modern cosmopolitan man of the people. If I'd like to just be frank with you, a little bit disappointed with it, with the sort of sneering undertones you displayed with regard to this tradition born on the steppes of South Central Asia millennia ago, still thriving. The sneering undertones, Daniel, I think the listeners will pick up on those. I do.
Kokpar. Kokpar.
Let's move it along.
Well, I'm happy to move it along, Scott. As you know, both you and I live exciting and salubrious, charismatic lives. And I've found myself in recent weeks on the couch at about 2 a.m.
With Mike Sheehan?
Watching...
Oh, sorry.
Don't even mention Mike Sheehan, okay? I mean, there's no one in our listenership who would probably even know
who Mike Sheehan is,
okay? I've found myself on the couch around about 2 a.m. in the morning, flicking through the channels and coming across some great Aussie drama,
yep.
Scott. And in particular, I've become a fan of classics such as Prisoner,
yep.
Which I'm sure our UK viewers would or listeners would be
starring Ken
with.
James.
I wouldn't say he actually starred in it. I think he made a couple of cameo appearances, Scott. But to say he starred in it would be a bit much. And I've also become a big fan of Sons and Daughters,
yeah.
The classic Seven Network drama that ran from, I think, 1981 through to 84, and really, really just launched the careers of many a fine Australian actor. But it's led me to think, Scott, about the difference between the Australian soap opera actor back in the 70s and early 80s compared to the Australian accent of the soap opera actor throughout the late 80s, 90s, and indeed right through to the day. I know you're a bit of a connoisseur of fine drama, yeah. Scott. I think if I was to say to you that one of the traits of 70s and 80s Australian soap opera acting. That's very difficult to say, Scott.
Soap opera acting, and there's nothing hard about it. Continue.
Yeah. Well, one of the traits of such acting was that anyone in a position of authority would speak in a quasi-British accent.
Okay.
And once you actually cotton onto this fact, it's actually quite amusing and quite addictive to watch. Shall I give you an example?
Are you going to do it yourself or to play a little grab?
Why go to the trouble of getting someone else to do it for me when I can nail it first
All
time,
right.
Scott?
Go.
Okay. The scene is one of the screws from Prisoner, one of the wardens from Prisoner, has gone home and has received a phone call. She answers.
Yep.
Hello, Jennifer speaking. Oh, well, I thought I sent that check off last week. Oh, Mr. Baxter, please don't say you'll turn the Yes, well, I know. Can't we meet to discuss about this? I see. Okay, well, Mr. Baxter, if that's the way you want it, I'll speak to you. Yes, Mr. Baxter. Goodbye.
Is that Mr. Squiggle? Mr. Squiggle?
That was one of the screws from
sounded
Prisoner,
almost identical to Mr. Squiggle. But sorry, getting off topic. Continue.
So that's the way it would run. And anyone you know that was working class in one of those soap operas during the 70s or 80s would have like a ridiculously broad Cockney / Australian accent. Shall I give you? An example? Okay. This is one of the prisoners from the prisoner. Or no. Fuck it. Let's go with a car mechanic repairing the car for one of the major characters' sons and daughters.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. All right. Quiet, Scott. Yeah. It's quiet.
Now, I think your carburetor's stuffed, man. Now, I think you're going to have to get a new one. True. No, true. Absolute bonza. Yeah, struth. No worries. Okay, give me a call back next week. Ta-da, bye-bye.
Ta-da. The only thing missing there, Daniel, was a hoo-roo right at the end. Hoo-roo. But no, that was very good. Very good.
Which brings me to the modern-day soap actor. I hardly ever watch Neighbours or Home Away or any of those other type shows, but I've watched enough, Scott, to know that one of the main acting tools that the Australian soap opera actor deploys is the side pause. Shall I give you an example?
Please.
Okay. Yeah. Quiet, Scott. Quiet. But I left the car out on the street last week, and when I went back, the toolbox was gone. That toolbox is my livelihood. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I've got to go around to Mrs. Marge's next week and fix her back fence. How am I going to do that without a toolbox? I just don't know what the world's coming to. Okay, so that's it, Scott.
Very good.
You see the evolution. It's just that today it seems to be a bit of a mix of the two.
I see the evolution, Daniel. You've made it 100% perceptible. It's bona fide.
Look, it's bona fide. It's on the record now, isn't it? It's on the record. Yeah. And you know, I say these things because I have a bit of a passing interest in sociology, and I thought that this podcast where appropriate throughout the course of the history of our tenure here as the Simpler Podcast, Scott, could every now and then just have a bit of a look at social trends and see what's actually happening in the world. And I think you can actually judge how healthy Australia is as a society and as a nation by the accents of the soap stars on soap drama shows such as Neighbours, Home and Away. And I think they're the only two that remain in Australia at the moment. But that's my two cents worth.
Daniel, much appreciated. You sprung that on me a little bit. It wasn't on the running sheet, but I'm really impressed with how you present an argument, how you present the evidence, and the careful way in which you draw a rational conclusion. So I want to thank you for that.
I can't help but think you're being a little bit patronising there, Scott. Fuck you. But let's move on to before we move on to listeners' letters, I've got a bit of a shout-out, Scott. I know you gave a bit of a shout-out last week. But before we go on, I'd like to give a shout-out to the boys at the Corangamite Dragons, who this week head off on a mid-season trip to Bogota, the enchanting capital of Colombia, Scott. So I just want to wish them and the boys, wish all the boys a great time. I know that in recent decades, Bogota's copped a bit of a bad rap for being quite a violent capital. Actually, the centre of the Colombian drug trade. And with all the, you know, drug cartels and murder and mayhem that go with that. But I would like to remind listeners that over the past 12 months, well, let's just take February 2012, for example, there's been a steep reduction in the number of homicides in Bogota. In February 2012, there were merely 95 cases of homicide, 85 of which were men and 10 were women. That's 27 lower than at the same time last year, Scott. So things are on the up in Bogota, and I would have no problem sending my kids across there to go on a camp or a mid-season football trip. I think the Colombians have really got their act together.
Daniel, what you're espousing there are facts. I would just like to add a bit of cautious context to that. You can do pretty much what you want with figures, Daniel. Now, February 2012 is on record as the best month over the last 10 years for low homicide numbers. Daniel. But then you only have to look 2 years back to 2010, and the number for that year was up 6%. It's a bit up and down, Daniel. You were saying facts there, but what I'm saying is maybe a bit of caution to go with your boyish optimism again.
You're a fucking bit of a neghead downer prick, aren't you, Scott? I mean, I don't want to offend, but every time I've got a good news story or something positive to say about the world, you've always got this sort of bullshit, cautious, you know, take be cautious with your optimism, Daniel, you know? Don't get too ahead of yourself. You're not only insulting me, Scott, you're insulting the people of Bogota, of which there are 7,155,052, which I think is, in layman's terms, 7.1 million people, yeah. Scott. So I take it that you've never been to Bogota?
I'll admit, I was on the border area of Colombia once. I crossed the border, but I didn't make it as far inland as Bogota. So no, I haven't been there.
Bogota is a wonderful place, Scott. Mm-hmm. And I think that even though there's an ongoing war and drugs and there's problems with cartels and a huge issue with poverty and, you know, like Mexico, regular beheadings and death squads in the streets of yeah. Bogota. I think the fact that the Carangamite Dragons have taken their own initiative to go across there and not only have a great time, but also show the way for millions of other tourists is something to be applauded and not derided.
I'm not deriding it at all. I applaud them for it.
All right.
Applauding them for it. Yeah.
Scott, it's time for listeners' letters.
Yes.
Now, as I said last week, this is the time of the show where we take in what listeners got to say. We can't do this show without you. So if you've got any correspondence for us whatsoever, the email address, as I've said before, is contact@thesimpleton.com.au. Scott, you have the first letter.
I have the first letter, Daniel. As you know, we're for the youth. We're for youth issues. We're for giving a voice to the youth.
We love the youth. We love the youth.
This letter, Daniel, I got it. And I have to admit it was barely legible when I got it. I had to sit down with a dictionary for a good 10 minutes to iron out all of the grammatical and spelling errors. But I pretty much think, Daniel, that I've now got it as it was originally intended. Should I read it out?
Well, yeah, we wouldn't be doing this segment if you weren't going to read it out. So just do that.
I don't know you and you don't know me. I'm a teenager from Melbourne and I'd like to get you to do a show on youth issues. I think there's too many bad images of youth in our society and we have to fight it. Mm. I'd be stoked to be on your show if it'd help. Daniel, that's from Bleed Kiffer of Wantirna South.
Did you say Kiffer?
I said Kiffer, yes, his surname. Bleed Kiffer.
Look, I don't want to sort of deride anyone that writes into us, Scott, because we appreciate every letter that comes in, but correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but isn't Kiffer sort of like a German term for marijuana?
Very impressive, Daniel. It's actually the term for a marijuana smoker. I suppose it's the best translation you would find for pothead.
Pothead. Yeah, pothead.
Very impressive, right, Daniel. Right. Did you pick that up just in the last few days doing your research for the podcast, or did you know that?
I just know these things instinctively, Scott. I think I'll give credit where credit's. I think it was actually a Trivial Pursuit question that I came across at one point, and it's just stuck with me. For instance, do you know what Hitler's favorite film was?
No, I don't. Enlighten me. Enlighten us.
King Kong. Another Trivial Pursuit pool of knowledge that I've stumbled across one time. Listen, back to Blade. Look, we're happy to cover youth issues, and we're actually thinking of getting a correspondent, a youth correspondent that we can cross to from time to time. So if people are interested in that, let us know.
Can I just cut in, Daniel?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are interested. And I'd just like to say to Blade, you don't know us, we don't know you. Cut down on the booze, Blade, get off the drugs altogether. Set a little bit of time apart to ponder things other than sex and then get back to us and we'll see if we can do business together.
Yep, always happy to do an current affair and help some pathetic, drug-fucked youth off the street make good of themselves and then exploit them for our own devious
purposes. You're all over the shop, Daniel. You're all over the shop here. One moment you're this sensitive, cosmopolitan man of the people I've alluded to before, then you come out with something like that. You're all over the shop.
Well, I'm just saying, look, I'm happy to have a youth correspondent, but they have to be of the right stock. And if Blade thinks that he's of the right stock, he's fooling himself and everyone else.
I agree with you on that.
Yes, there's another letter, Scott. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll just read it out. I'm uncertain as to whether this letter section could be used to promote a film, Men of Honor, but knowing the sort of listenership that is targeted for your program, I thought it would be the ideal forum to advocate the new independent film titled The Seven Souls, of grim budget and visual effects, but big on content, character development, and aesthetic property from both an ocular and esoteric perspective. That was from Grant Bender, of no address attached.
That's a really interesting letter. It's got absolutely nothing to do with what we've covered so far in this series. And I don't really plan on seeing this, but I have to say, a very good critique of The Seven Souls of Grover Henry. Have you seen the film? I've heard a lot about it, Scott. I read the New York Times review of it, and it was quite a glowing review. But thanks very much, Grant, for sending that in. And again, another very interesting surname, but let's not get caught up on surnames too much.
Oh, yeah. The next letter.
Yeah, well, I've got letter three.
Hang on.
This one was actually CC'd to me.
You said that I'm the one who gets the letters. Did you not just say that before?
You did, but you forwarded this one to me, Scott. Don't you remember?
You've
got a memory like a sieve.
Yeah. Sorry, there's a lot going on. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's a lot going on in your life generally, Scott. We won't go on about that. But I've got letter three, Scott, and I'm going to read it out. And it comes from Pearson Wesley of St. Kitts. And he writes, "Well done, guys." Scott, you've got letter four, touching on quite an important issue. We're all about the environment here. And this week's letter writer has sent us in a letter about a very important issue. So, Scott.
Here it is. I read with distress of the impending extinction of a little-known Aussie icon, the green-spotted river lobster, which is the favourite prey of that introduced menace, the Catalonian septic fire pheasant. I'm not normally for the culling of any animal, yet I implore our state government to act against this aggressive bird of prey, which is not even native to this country, in order to save the green-spotted river lobster from being consigned to the dustbin of history. Daniel, that was from Drake Luther of Shepparton.
Drake has obviously spent a fair bit of time. I think if I'm correct, Scott, the green spotted river lobster is actually a native of Tasmanian waters. Am I correct there?
You indeed are correct, Daniel. But before the continents split, scientists postulate.
I think people know the geology, Scott. I think people know the geology.
Yeah.
If it wasn't actually true, you would swear that the Catalonian septic fire pheasant was just a fucking bullshit name made up.
So you're accusing Drake here?
I'm not. No. I'm just saying to the listeners, you may well think that the Catalonian septic fire pheasant is a bullshit name of a bird that doesn't actually really exist. And since when do birds actually really prey on crustaceans such as lobster, who have the ability to actually slit a bird's throat with one of its claws? You might say that, listener, but we're here to assure you, Scott and I have done our research, and indeed, the green spotted river lobster and the Catalonian septic fire pheasant are actually arch foes. Am I correct,
Scott?
You're
correct, Daniel. We know that's true, and good of you to assure the listeners. That's true.
Happy to. Well, Scott, I think that brings us about to the end of this episode. And as always, at this time of the podcast, we like to have a bit of a look into the future and see whether there's anything that we've spotted on the horizon that we should alert listeners to before it happens, with our great insight, our knowledge of history repeating, and basically our cocksure arrogance. So, Scott, do you see anything over the next week that our listeners should be aware of?
You're squeezing cock into everything. You're talking of cock par. You're talking of cockney accents, cocksure, arrogance. To answer your question, no. Don't see anything of importance happening the next week. But Daniel, you've got to get over that, man.
It's just such a fucking funny name, Cockpa. You know, it's ridiculous. It's hilarious. But anyway, Scott, I'd like to thank you for your time. I know that you have a very busy schedule and you've found time to fit this podcast in. I would like to thank myself for being myself, and I would like to thank everyone else in the world for being who they are. But without further ado, you can find this podcast on the www.thesimpleton.com.au. And I'm very pleased to announce that you can now subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. If you just go to the iTunes store, go to the podcast section and just type in The Simpleton, you'll come across this and you'll be able to subscribe to hours and hours of fun-filled entertainment for the whole family. So once again, listeners, thanks very much. Thank you, Scott, and bye-bye.
Goodbye.